Like to apologize to everybody who was at the Chip and Eric conference this weekend and saw our tightrope walker. I do recognize now that that was wrong, and I apologize.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't have been that way had they not canceled the juggler, but yeah, they did.
But the juggler took his shirt off.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're not trying to be controversial. It's just funny. It's funny. Just laugh at it. When ridiculous things happen in Christianity, we should just laugh at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else can we do?
Get angry? Let's do that.
That's a much better idea.
Speaking of getting angry.
Today's day 103. Oh, no, it's not.
No, that would make us all angry.
I'm sorry.
You've set us back 10 whole
days. I was
days.
Looking at the wrong note. It is 113.
I got to point this out to our readers here. That does not say 103. That says 100.
Yeah, there's no 103 over here anywhere. No. It's been a long day. It's 113, and we're reading 2 Samuel 7 through 9 and Mark 12, 1 through 27.
One more correction here. We're reading 2 Daniel.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right.
7 through 9 and Daniel
12, 1 through 27.
You know what I just realized? Okay, I'm going to jump back to the last day that we read because I forgot to mention this. David's sons born in Hebron. And one of them's Daniel. Are you kidding me?
Did I didn't remember that. No. I don't remember that either.
The oldest was Daniel, whose mother was Daniel from Jezreel. The second was Daniel, whose mother was Daniel, the widow of Daniel from Carmel. Third was Daniel, whose mother was Daniel, the daughter of Daniel, king of Geshur. Fourth was Daniel, whose mother was Daniel. The fifth was Daniel, whose mother was Daniel. The sixth was Daniel, whose mother was Daniel.
It's all Daniel.
Daniel's wife.
Legal names, of course.
Yeah. Anyway, here we go.
I mean, we learn something new all the time on this.
Speaking of something new is about to happen in 2 Samuel 7.
A big something new.
Yes, this will frame out the rest of the Old Testament and well beyond that. But you cannot understand the rest of the Old Testament without this passage. So let's read it.
Big deal.
The Lord's covenant promise to David. When King David was settled in his palace and the Lord had given him rest from all the surrounding enemies, the king summoned Nathan the prophet. Look, David said, I'm living in a beautiful cedar palace, but the ark of God is out there in a tent. Nathan replied to the king, go ahead and do whatever you have in mind, for the Lord is with you. But that same night, the Lord told Nathan, go and tell my servant David, this is what the Lord has declared. Are you the one to build a house for me to live in? I have never lived in a house from the day I brought the Israelites out of Egypt until this very day. I've always moved from one place to another with a tent and a tabernacle as my dwelling. Yet no matter where I've gone with the Israelites, I have never once complained to Israel's tribal leaders, the shepherds of my people, Israel. I have never asked them, why haven't you built me a beautiful cedar house? Now go and say to my servant David, this is what the Lord of heaven's armies has declared. I took you from tending sheep in the pasture and selected you to be the leader of my people. I have been with you wherever you have gone, and I have destroyed all your enemies before your eyes. Now I will make your name as famous as anyone who has ever lived on the earth, and I will provide a homeland for my people Israel, planting them in a secure place where they will never be disturbed. Evil nations won't oppress them as they've done in the past, starting from the time I appointed judges to rule my people Israel, and I will give you rest from all your enemies. Furthermore, the Lord declares that he will make a house for you, a dynasty of kings. For when you die and are buried with your ancestors, I will raise up one of your descendants and your own offspring, and I will make his kingdom strong. He is the one who will build a house, a temple for my name, and I will secure his royal throne forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. If he sins, I will correct and discipline him with the rod like any father would do. But my favor will not be taken from him as I took it from Saul, whom I removed from your sight. Your house and your kingdom will continue before me for all time, and your throne will be secure forever. So Nathan went back to David and told him everything the Lord had said in this vision.
David's prayer of thanks. Then King David went in and sat before the Lord and prayed, who am I, O sovereign Lord, and what is my family that you have brought me this far? And now, sovereign Lord, in addition to everything else, you speak of giving your servant a lasting dynasty. Do you deal with everyone this way, O sovereign Lord? What more can I say to you? You know what your servant is really like, sovereign Lord. Because of your promise and according to your will, you have done all these great things and have made them known to your servant. How great are you, how great you are, O sovereign Lord. There is no one like you. We have never even heard of another God like you. What other nation on earth is like your people, Israel? What other nation, O God, have you redeemed from slavery to be your own people? You made a great name for yourself when you redeemed your people from Egypt. You performed awesome miracles and drove out nations and gods that stood in their way. You made Israel your very own people forever, and you, O Lord, became their God. And now, O Lord God, I am your servant. Do as you have promised concerning me and my family. Confirm it as a promise that will last forever, and may your name be honored forever, so that everyone will say, the Lord of heaven's armies is God over Israel, and may the house of your servant David continue before you forever. O Lord of heaven's armies, God of Israel, I have been bold enough to pray this prayer to you because you have revealed all this to your servant, saying, I will build a house for you, a dynasty of kings, for you are God, O sovereign Lord. Your words are true, and you have promised these good things to your servant. And now may it please you to bless the house of your servant, so that it may continue forever before you. For you have spoken, and when you grant a blessing to your servant, O sovereign Lord, it is an eternal blessing.
David's military victories. After this, David defeated and subdued the Philistines by conquering Gath, their largest town. David also conquered the land of Moab. He made the people lie down on the ground in a row, and he measured them off in groups with the length of rope. He measured off two groups to be executed for every one group to be spared. The Moabites who were spared became David's subjects and paid him tribute money. David also destroyed the forces of Hadadezer, the son of Rahab, king of Zobah, when Hadadezer marched out to strengthen his control along the Euphrates River. David captured 1,000 chariots, 7,000 charioteers, and 20,000 foot soldiers. He crippled all the chariot horses except enough for 100 chariots. When the Arameans from Damascus arrived to help King Hadadezer, David killed 22,000 of them. Then he placed several army garrisons in Damascus, the Aramean capital, and the Arameans became David's subjects and paid him tribute money. So the Lord made David victorious wherever he went. David brought the gold shields of Hadadezer's officers to Jerusalem, along with a large amount of bronze from Hadadezer's towns of Taba and Berothai. When King Toai of Hamath heard that David had destroyed the entire army of Hadadezer, he sent his son Joram to congratulate King David for his successful campaign. Hadadezer and Toai had been enemies and were often at war. Joram presented David with many gifts of silver, gold, and bronze. King David dedicated all these gifts to the Lord, and he did with the silver and gold from the as he did with the silver and gold from the other nations he had defeated, from Edom, Moab, Ammon, Philistia, and Amalek, and from Hadadezer, son of Rahab, king of Zobah. So David became even more famous when he returned from destroying 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. He placed army garrisons throughout Edom, and all the Edomites became David's subjects. In fact, the Lord made David victorious wherever he went. So David reigned over all Israel and did what was just and right for all his people. Joab, son of Zeruiah, was commander of the army. Jehoshaphat, son of Ahilud, was the royal historian. Zadok, son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, son of Abiathar, were the priests. Seraiah was the court secretary. Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, was captain of the king's bodyguard, and David's sons served as priestly leaders.
2 Samuel chapter 9, David's kindness to Mephibosheth. One day David asks, is anyone in Saul's family still alive? Anyone to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake? He summoned a man named Ziba, who had been one of Saul's servants. Are you Ziba? The king asked. Yes, sir, I am, Ziba replied. The king then asked him, is anyone still alive from Saul's family? If so, I want to show God's kindness to them. Ziba replied, yes, one of Jonathan's sons is still alive. He is crippled in both feet. Where is he? The king asked. In Lo Debar, Ziba told him, at the home of Machir, son of Amiel. So David sent for him and brought him from Machir's home. His name was Mephibosheth, and he was Jonathan's son and Saul's grandson. When he came to David, he bowed low to the ground in deep respect. David said, greetings, Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth replied, I am your servant. Don't be afraid, David said. I intend to show kindness to you because of my promise to your father, Jonathan. I will give you all the property that once belonged to your grandfather, Saul, and will let you and you will eat here with me at the king's table. Mephibosheth bowed respectfully and exclaimed, who is your servant that you should show such kindness to a dead dog like me? Then the king summoned Saul's servant Ziba and said, I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and servants are to farm out the land for him to produce food for your master's household. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, will eat here at my table. Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Ziba replied, "Yes, my lord, the king, I am your servant, and I will do all that you have commanded." And from that time on, Mephibosheth ate regularly at David's table, like one of the king's own sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah. And from then on, all the members of Ziba's household were Mephibosheth's servants. And Mephibosheth, who was crippled in both feet, lived in Jerusalem and ate regularly at the king's table.
Okay, now we'll jump forward here to Mark chapter 12, verses 1 through 27. The parable of the evil farmers. Then Jesus began teaching them with stories. A man planted a vineyard. He built a wall around it, dug a pit for pressing out the grape juice, and built a lookout tower. Then he released the vineyard to tenant farmers and moved to another country. At the time of the grape harvest, he sent one of his servants to collect his share of the crop. But the farmers grabbed the servant, beat him up, and sent him back empty-handed. The owner then sent another servant, but they insulted him, beat him over the head. The next servant he sent was killed. Others he sent were either beaten or killed until there was only one left, his son, whom he loved dearly. The owner finally sent him, thinking, "Surely they'll respect my son." But the tenant farmers said to one another, "Here comes the heir to his estate. Let's kill him and get the estate for ourselves." So they grabbed him and murdered him and threw his body out of the vineyard. "What do you suppose the owner of the vineyard will do?" Jesus asked. "I'll tell you. He will come and kill those farmers and lease the vineyard to others. Didn't you ever read this in the scriptures? The stone that the builders rejected has now become the cornerstone. This is the Lord's doing, and it is wonderful to see." The religious leaders wanted to arrest Jesus because they realized he was telling the story against them. They were the wicked farmers, but they were afraid of the crowd, so they left him and went away.
Taxes for Caesar. Later, the leaders sent some Pharisees and supporters of Herod to trap Jesus into saying something for which he could be arrested. "Teacher," they said, "we know how honest you are. You are impartial and don't play favorites. You teach the way of God truthfully. Now tell us, is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay them or shouldn't we?" Jesus saw through their hypocrisy and said, "Why are you trying to trap me? Show me a Roman coin and I'll tell you." When they handed it to him, he asked, "Whose picture and title are stamped on it?" "Caesar's," they replied. "Well then," Jesus said, "give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give to God what belongs to God." His reply completely amazed them.
Discussion about resurrection. Then Jesus was approached by some Sadducees, religious leaders who say there is no resurrection from the dead. They posed this question. "Teacher, Moses gave us a law that if a man dies, leaving his wife without children, his brother should marry the widow and have a child who will carry on the brother's name. Well, suppose there were seven brothers. The oldest one married and then died without children. So the second brother married the widow, but he also died without children. The third brother married her. Then the third brother married her. This continued with all seven of them, and still there were no children. Last of all, the woman also died. So tell us, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? For all seven were married to her." Jesus replied, "Your mistake is that you don't know the scriptures and you don't know the power of God. For when the dead rise, they will neither marry nor be given in marriage. In this respect, they will be like the angels in heaven. But now, as to whether the dead will be raised, haven't you ever read about this in the writings of Moses, in the story of the burning bush? Long after Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob died, God said to Moses, 'I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' So he is the God of the living, not the dead. You have made a serious error."
And that is our reading today.
We have a little guest joining us. Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
Say it again.
Hi.
Micah's here reading with us.
I said hi.
Yeah, all right, Micah. All right, so we read that, and we have two questions. How does this help us love God more? How does this help us love others more? So, Allison, the question is to you. How done this make you love
others
more?
I love that David did not have to go after and find Mephibosheth and see, is there someone still living? He could have lived, he's just ignorant completely of the fact that Mephibosheth even existed, but his love for Jonathan and the fact that he made the promise to Jonathan. He remembered that promise and he sought out Mephibosheth and brought him to him, you know, and took care of him. And I just think no one would have even known, you know, that he didn't do that because it didn't bring him any glory as king. You know, it's not like anybody would have known that he had made that promise to Jonathan until they could hold him to it. Right. That was just between him and Jonathan.
Yeah.
but he held up his end of that, and he did that because of his love for Jonathan. And so I just think when we make promises to people, to keep them, and also because of our love for each other, to do what is right and to help other people, and to even when it puts us out, even when you have to go search, is there somebody? Is there anybody I can help? You know, is there a son of Jonathan somewhere?
Sure.
Is there something I can do? He had to go seek him out, and he did, and he brought him back. And I love that I love that. And I love their friendship. David and Jonathan, I think it's just such a great friendship. It's really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And the more I'm reading about this, the more I'm realizing, like, him sending Ziba to work the fields that Saul owned. First of all, think of how much property Saul must have owned. He was the king.
Mm-hmm.
He had all the best fields and vineyards and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he sends Ziba and all the old servants of Jonathan and Saul's household to go work that, basically giving them their freedom, mm-hmm. essentially, because where's their master?
Right.
Eating at the king's table.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot going on there. Pretty cool. Yeah, I love that, and I'm going to stay there. I love that God does this for us,
mm-hmm.
right? When we are completely helpless, broken, and undeserving, God pulls us out, sits us at his table,
mm-hmm.
and just completely restores us. I mean, this is mm-hmm. such a beautiful picture of our salvation, that God has taken us from a hopelessly desperate situation, right, and set us at his table. And it is really easy for me to love God more. Look, I mean, this is a picture. God says that he chose David. Why? Because he's a man after his own heart. I mean, this is God's heart,
mm-hmm.
right? This is God's heart. Everyone wants to say, well, David killed that guy and he was a man after God's own heart, and struggle with that. Well, if you want to understand how David was a man after God's own heart, if you want to understand why David demonstrated such covenant loyalty that God would establish his throne forever, if you want to understand that, look no further than this story with Mephibosheth and Ziba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is exactly what mm-hmm. he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Because of where his heart was. Because, you know, you go forward here and you see when we read in the New Testament in Mark, they're just trying to get Jesus to, you know, lay out the law, lay out our boundaries, lay out our rules, lay out our, mm-hmm. but do we do this? Is there this?
Yeah.
Is there, how far can we go?
Yeah.
You know, and that's not where David's heart was.
Right.
David's heart was, you know, I love Jonathan. I want to help his son. I want to bring him in. I don't have to.
Yeah. I could just keep all this land for myself and all these servants.
I don't have to.
And I don't need, you know, another, mm-hmm. I have an extra seat at my table anyway.
Right.
Yeah. I also just real quickly, I love the parable of the evil farmers. I mean, what a beautiful thing. Not because they're going to reject and kill the Son of God, but because Jesus, he calls out the Pharisees, but he also shouts out the prophets, you know, and that often gets missed here because the prophets are all these messengers that the king has sent along the way. And so Jesus is basically saying, like, hey, you know, they were really important.
Mm-hmm.
They were really important to mm-hmm. understanding the trajectory of Israel. And as they were important for that, it makes a big difference to see that and to think, like, you know, rabbinic tradition holds that Isaiah was cut in half,
mm.
you know, like, and we know some of these prophets, how they were killed. And I don't know. It just, to me, it's like, okay, that is kind of neat that Jesus would shout them out in this mm-hmm. parable. And it also stinks because you just hate what the parable is about, right? Like the rejection of the Messiah and the wrath of God that's going to be poured out on them. Just tough.
It's
tough
odd
stuff.
Too. I've never caught this before, but it's odd. The whole religious leaders wanted to arrest Jesus because they realized he was telling the story against them.
Yeah.
They were the wicked farmers.
Yeah.
Okay.
They
so
know.
You know.
They get it. But.
But you keep going in the direction you're going.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get it, then you get it. Right?
I mean, isn't that you are stubborn and wicked people, right?
Like. Yeah.
I don't know how much more stubborn and wicked you can get. So yeah, that's it.
So much today. So much
in
this reading today.
Micah, we were doing something silly earlier where we were replacing everyone's name with Daniel. Is that kind of funny?
Daniel Chip?
Yeah. So it would be
Micah, Daniel.
So the name of the podcast would be Daniel and Daniel Read Through the Bible. Do you like that? Is that cool?
Kind of.
You kind of like it? Okay, what if your new name, hear me out. This is something your mom and I are going to talk about, okay?
Okay.
We are thinking about renaming you Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel. So instead of Micah Christian Mosher, you would be Daniel. Does that sound good?
I mean.
He's blown away.
Yeah.
Do you like that?
What if it was just your middle name? Micah Daniel. Phoebe Daniel.
No. What if it was your name and every other name on the planet? We just start calling each other Daniel. Also, I have a question for you. What part of Michigan are you from? What part of Michigan are you from? Where are you from?
Heston,
Michigan?
Yep, that's the one.
Heston, Michigan.
Oh.
That's wonderful.
What is Heston, Michigan?
Michigan's another state. We just joke around that everybody's from there. Are you from Michigan?
No.
Yeah, you are. That's right. You heard Heston. It here first. Daniel from Heston, Michigan.
Heston, Kansas, Michigan.
From Heston, Kansas, Michigan. All right, that's it.
Yep,
it's
have
over.
A good day.
It's done. Micah, do you want to say anything to the people before we leave?
Hello, bye-bye.
Hello, bye-bye. Did you know your grandparents listen to this? Do you want to say anything to your grandma and grandpa?
Hello, goodbye. I love you.
All right, that's good enough. We'll see you guys later.